Okay, it's not a big jump to connect Lashon Hara to Parshas Balosra. Of course, we have the whole episode of Miriam, which involves Lashon Hara. But the specific topic that they picked for tonight actually has a more direct connection to the Parsha beyond the general topic of Lashon Hara, and that should become clear in a moment. And that's why I'm highlighting this topic. But also, there are a few interesting takeaways that go beyond its heading, which are also worth mentioning. So I thought it was an opportunity to bring that in as well. And through all of that, to bring that to the forefront. So the official title that we announced for tonight was Lashon Hara in the presence of the person you're talking about when the subject is present. And on the surface, that would seem like a no-brainer. It would seem like if I were to ask you, is it permissible to speak about a person when they're in the room? So you would probably say that not only should it not be permissible, but it's probably worse than speaking when they're not in the room, because it's just as bad. It should be straight out Lashon Hara. And in addition, it's probably actually combined with a worse Aveira, that presumably you are embarrassing them at the same time. And that's at least as bad an Aveira, if not worse. A few weeks ago, we read Parshas Bahar and the prohibition of Anas Dvarim. And the Gemara has some very severe things to say about Hamalbim Pnei Chaveira V'Rabim. So one would think that if the person you're speaking about is present, so then not only is that also Aser, but it's worse. And if you thought that, then you're in good company, because that's what the Chafetz Chaim writes also. He agrees with you that, yes, to speak Lashon Hara behind someone's back is particularly nasty. That's true. And Rashi in Parshas Kisavo refers to that as Makarehu B'Seser. You're hitting somebody from behind. So, yes, that's not too terrific. But if they're there, you're adding on to it the additional Avera of Halbanus Pnei Chaveira B'Rabim. So, certainly, that should be problematic even to a greater degree. So what's surprising is that there is a statement in the Gemara that seems to say differently. There is a Gemara in Maseches Erechin on Daf Tezvav Mitbeis, where you find the line there that Kol Milsa Dis Amres Ape Mara Les Behu Mishum Lishne Bisha, that anything that is said in front of the subject is not part of the Isser of Lashon Hara. So that's surprising. We'll discuss here whether. Whether or not that's accepted, Lahalacha, we'll discuss. There are some who say straight out that.
Rabbi, I think you're still muted.
There are some who say straight out that that's simply not accepted, Lahalacha, and that that's one opinion in the Gemara that we don't follow. And that's certainly the way it sounds like from the Rambam. The Rambam says Beferish that there's an Isser of Lashon Hara even if the person is still in the room. And we noted that that's what the Chafetz Chaim says. So it could be that that's the end of the story and that this is one opinion in the Gemara that's not followed. We should note that before dismissing it completely, that this is similar to another statement, it's similar in formulation to another statement that appears there in Erchin, and also appears in Bava Basra, a more well-known statement that seems to have more of a clear presence, Lahalacha, even though it's a topic of major machlokas, and that's the idea of Ape Tlasa. So the Gemara says in similar formulation that Kol Milsa Dis Amris Ape Tlasa Les Behu Mishum Lishne Bisha, that anything that is said in front of three is not subject to Lashon Hara. And that has the same kind of reaction. It also seems surprising, because there again, you would think saying something in public makes it worse. And again, the Chafetz Chaim agrees with you that if you say something to one person, it's bad. In public, it's worse. And there, it does seem to be accepted la halacha, but what it means is a big machlokas. And there are a number of views in Rishonim as to what Apei Tlasa is. The Chafetz Chaim says you have to be very careful with Apei Tlasa because of the different views. So we do assume it means something, but it's a big machlokas. What? That's not our topic for tonight. But here you have a similar formulation. You have that same kind of a surprising statement. And here there's a possibility that maybe it's just not accepted la halacha. But on the other hand, there are those who assume that it is accepted la halacha, and we have to figure out how to interpret it. So it could be that maybe what we mean to say is that it's bad, but it's just a different avera. And that Lashon Hara, by its nature, is something else. And this is the Isser of Halbanus Pnei Chaver Barabim. And that Lashon Hara is something else. So, for example, there is the view of the Sefer Yireim that understands that Rechilus, particularly, has an aspect of deception to it. That it has a two-facedness to it. And he points to a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which talks about Rechilus, the word Rachel, and the language of the pasuk is Holche Rachel Nechoshes Ubarzel. So that idea of using two elements of bronze and iron, so the Sefer Yireim understands that the person who's a Rochel, he's two-faced. So he's, on the one hand, he's bronze, which has a nice image to it. And when the person's not there, so then he's like iron, which is like a deadly sword. So the understanding is that that's what a rochel is. He likes walking around spreading stories, and he's two-faced. So he seems like he's your friend when you're there, and when you're not there, he stabs you in the back. So maybe that's the whole idea, that Lashon Hara, Rochel, is a deceptive kind of speaker. So if you're straightforward and you're speaking in the person's presence, so then you're perhaps violating other things, but you're not necessarily violating Lashon Hara. It's interesting because that could also fit. The whole Gemara has more to it. There's a whole back and forth in the Gemara. In fact, the objection to that statement is Kol Shekein L'Shnabisha V'Chutzpah. You know, it's Lashon Hara and it's Chutzpah. So the question of whether there are other midos that are being brought here, so maybe there's a type of attitude that it's a brazenness that's the opposite of deceptiveness. So, okay, it's not deceptive, and it's a different kind of avera. Maybe that's the idea. And that mimer is also brought together with, you know, I would say it in his presence. So it's not just whether you're actually saying in his presence, but the kind of thing that you would say in somebody's presence. So maybe it's about the litmus test of whether you're being deceptive or not. So that's another way of looking at it. But there are those who do paskin like this Gemara, and notable among them is the Maharal. And the Maharal is often very mysterious in his writing, so I can't guarantee that I'm representing him correctly, but I'll do my best to try to interpret what the Maharal says. But if I understand correctly what the Maharal is saying, so the Maharal understands that it's not Lashon Hara when you're in the presence of the person, and he seems to be saying a combination of things. One is that, first of all, it's a little better, because in addition to the fact, or separate from the fact of the Sefer Yireim, that you're not two-faced, but you're also allowing the person to defend himself. So that's something which maybe is kind of a improvement over speaking when the person's not there, which is a significant element. You know, it's interesting also because there is a cherim hakadmonim not to speak Lashon Hara, the language there is Motzi Shemra, about mesim, about people who aren't alive anymore. And it's an interesting discussion whether that's a extension of the Yisro Lashon Hara. In general, do we assume that the Yisro Lashon Hara applies to mesim? That's actually apparently a machlokes, Rebbe Yoshev and Rebbe Yaakov Kamenetsky. That's Rabbi Yashiv and his Shiurim on Masachas Brachos. So he writes that there's an Esur Lashon Hara even on people who aren't alive anymore. And Rebekah of Kamenetsky in his Chidushim on Chumash and Amos Liakov, so he talks about in Parshas Vayesha, why does the Torah tell us all these bad things about the brothers? Isn't that Esur Lashon Hara? So among other things, he says there's no Esur Lashon Hara on Mason. So that's an interesting question, but we do have a Chayrim not to be Motzi Shemra on Mason. So in general, does that mean that that's a new Isser, or is that just an enforcement of an existing Isser, so you can't necessarily derive from there what the din was before? But the idea of either a enforcement or a new ban on speaking ill of the dead, so why should we care more about the dead than the living? So a little bit is because it's worse if they can't defend themselves. So maybe that's an element here. So maybe there is a little bit of a svara to say that if the person is present, so then they might be able to object. And if the person isn't there, so then that, in a sense, is maybe more what the damage of Lashon Hara represents. But the Maral, the more mysterious line, so he seems to be saying something about the particular nature of speech, that speech has a power to it, that it is a kli that is able to do damage from a distance. And unlike a sword, where you have to be close to a person to physically hit them with a sword, so speech is something which can hurt somebody from afar, and if you are in their presence, so then you don't need to speak about them, you can just punch them in the nose. So speech doesn't actually impact, or isn't meant to impact, in close proximity, and therefore the nature of Lashon Hara is not meant in that context, something along those lines. Again, it's a very interesting kind of formulation. So one way or another, however, he comes to this conclusion, but this is the position of the Maral, that he indeed paskins like this view of the Gemara, that even if there are other averas involved, but the Isser of Lashon Hara is not relevant when the person is present. So the Chafetz Chaim quotes this Maral in his Sefer, and the Chafetz Chaim says the Maral is wrong. And not just because Misvari thinks he's wrong, but he says, I can bring you a raya that he's wrong. And the raya comes from the Medrash, and Medrash is talking about this week's Parsha. So what's the raya? Because there is a Medrash that relates that in this week's Parsha, so here we have the paradigmatic episode of Lashon Hara. Here we have Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe. So we can all agree that that certainly is an Isser Lashon Hara. And this may even be one of the Makoros of the Isser Lashon Hara. The Torah in Sefer Devarim then tells us to remember the episode of Miriam. And the Ramban writes there that that's an extra mitzvah in of itself. That should be one of the 613 mitzvahs, to remember what Miriam did to keep us away from Lashon Hara. And then right next to that pasuk, we're also told, Hishamer benega hatzaras, and some understand that to mean that we should avoid the behavior that leads to tzaras, like Miriam did. That's to tell us again in this of speaking Lashon Hara. So I think we can all agree that what Miriam did was Lashon Hara. That seems to not be a question. But according to one opinion in the Medrash, and this is quite striking because I think it kind of redefines the image we have when we read this week's Parsha. According to this opinion, when Aaron and Miriam were having their conversation, when Miriam was saying what she was saying about Moshe, Moshe was actually in the room. It's a pretty fascinating perspective, and it kind of repaints the picture for us. And the Parsha makes the whole picture kind of different than what we normally conceptualize, what we normally picture in terms of what we think is going on. So says the Chafetz Chaim, if that's the case, so isn't that a raya against the Maral that apparently you see here that Miriam was speaking in Moshe's presence, and That was unquestionably called Lashon Hara. So here you have a raya that Lashon Hara applies even in the presence of the person who you are speaking about. So there are many, many interesting things that I think we can derive from here. And we'll see some now and some in the next few minutes. So first of all, in general, there is a whole discussion about the question of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim and the validity of different opinions in Chazal and whether both opinions can be correct even when they disagree and if that extends even when they disagree in Metzias or when they disagree in terms of stories in Chumash, because presumably only one thing is true, only one thing happened. If there's a machlokas in halachas, you could say they both have some aspect of truth. But if there's a machlokas about a story, so presumably only one thing happened. So I thought that there's room to say that even when there's a machlokas about a story, you still can say Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim, because even if only one version of the story happened, but there's significance to the machlokas because it means that the Tanoim Ramaroim felt that both versions of the story are possible. And sometimes that has halachic relevance in of itself, or maybe it has hashkafic relevance. So this is an example of that. So maybe Moshe was in the room, maybe he wasn't. But we see here that the Chofetz Chaim bringing a raya from this opinion, which is the less assumed opinion here, and the point being that whether that was the Metzias or not, but it says something about the halacha. So there's an aspect of Elu ve'elu, even to a machlokas about a story, because the relevance is whether or not it's what happened, but it's relevant to how you can picture what's possible in terms of the halacha. So that's just a footnote to that. So in any event, so from that tzad in the Medrash, from that possibility, the Chafetz Chaim says, here you can bring a raya that there's an Isser Lashon Hara, even if the person is there. From the fact that we can entertain the possibility, whether this opinion is right or not, but from the fact that maybe Moshe was present, and we know that what Miriam was doing was Lashon Hara. So that shows us that there's an Isser Lashon Hara, even when the person is present. So that was the Machlokas, the Chofetz Chaim, and the Maharal. And the intellectual descendants of the Maharal, so they all took up the defense of the Maharal on this issue. And they wrote similar things with nuances, but we'll try to just present it all in one shot. So most prominently, the Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Huttner, in his Sefer on Shavuos, has a discussion about this. But there are a few others also. Rav Moshe Shapiro had an essay about this that was published in a sefer called Biyat HaLashon, probably elsewhere as well. In the Asufas Marachos of the Reshiv Rav Goldwicht, there's an essay there from his son-in-law, from Moshe Miernik. And a few others who followed often in the intellectual traditions of the Maharal. So they wrote to defend the Maharal on this point, and they said in a similar style with different nuances, but this is the general Mahalach, the question of how can you sustain the Maharal's position and defend him in light of this Raya? How could it be that the Maharal could be correct that there is no Lashon Hara if the person is present, and yet Miriam was speaking Lashon Hara and Moshe could have been present? How could they both be true? So the general essence of the common mahalach that they have is something along the following lines. That basically there are two types of Lashon Hara. One is straight factual reporting and of a negative nature. And the other is the more subjective type of Lashon Hara, where somebody is giving their assessment of something. And what Rav Huttner in this context describes as a deficiency of being dan l'chafschos, a lack of giving the benefit of the doubt. So that distinction is important for this rule, that when we say that there's no Lashon Hara if the person is present. So we are talking specifically about relating negative facts. Saying something factual that is negative, so that wouldn't apply if the person is present. And presumably that's true, because then the person can say, no, it's not true. But when the nature of a Lashon Hara is that it's not straight factual reporting, but it's more in the category of assessment, it's more about how you judge what's going on, the deficiency in being dam l'chav schuz, so then that applies even when the person is present. And, says Rav Huttner, and the others in this general direction, that is the relevant category in the case of Miriam and Moshe. That she was failing to give him the benefit of the doubt, to be dam l'chav schuz. And in that case, so then that's called Lashon Hara, even if he is present. And that, the Maharal would agree, that's Lashon Hara, even in the presence of the subject. And I think there's a very, very important yisod that's contained in that chiluk, and it's worth focusing on that for a moment, and it's actually relevant to understanding all of Lashon Hara. And that really the ikur, chomer of Lashon Hara, comes within that distinction. Because even if we break things down that way and we say that Lashon Hara comes in different forms, sometimes it's about factual relating, and sometimes it's about opinions and assessment. So really the main harm that comes from Lashon Hara is often in the second category. It's often in how people are judged and assessed in a subjective way. And that is most likely what's going on in this episode in this week's Parsha, which indeed is the paradigmatic episode of Lashon Hara, the primary episode of Lashon Hara in the Torah that is held up, that we are supposed to remember to keep us away from Lashon Hara. And that we are told, according to the Ramban, we have a special extra mitzvah. The Ramban says this is really one of the 613 mitzvahs, and the Rambam should have counted it. We have a special extra mitzvah to remember to keep us away from Lashon Hara. It's this story. And it sounds like this story is really of that nature. What was going on? Was Miriam telling Aaron something factual that he didn't know? So maybe. So if you look at Rashi, a little bit of a question, what's going on? Was he finding out for the first time that Moshe had separated from his wife? Possibly, but it sounds like the main gist of what was going on, and that's certainly the way Rav Huttner is understanding it, is that they were putting their interpretation on Moshe's separation from his wife. And we know, as Rav Soloveitchik and others had commented on the nature of Miriam's offense here, that her Lashon Hara was in her assessment that she thought that Moshe was equal to them and that they were also Nevi'im and they didn't have to separate from their spouses. So how come Moshe was different? They failed to appreciate the unique stature of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that was the nature of their Avera. And if that's the case, so again, the Lashon Hara, whether or not it involved any factual reporting, it may or maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but the Iker Avera, the Iker Chumra, was in the characterization, was in the assessment. And I believe that's a huge yesod, because that's where a lot of our Lashon Hara takes place. And very often we don't pay attention to that, and we see Lashon Hara as defined by stating over negative facts only. And we don't appreciate that the real Avera often takes place in how we interpret those facts. And it's very possible to maintain that that's really why the Torah prohibits Lashon Hara. that the question is often asked, you know, if Lashon Hara is true, so why should it be so terrible to say the truth? And especially, why should there be an Isser of Kabbalah Lashon Hara? If Kabbalah Lashon Hara would mean accepting the truth, how could we be commanded to be willfully ignorant? Unless we understand that Lashon Hara is not only about the factual part, but that it very much focuses on how we characterize the factual part. And in fact, that is where much of the Aveira happens. And that may come from facts and may not be an overt lie, but also isn't true. And that's essentially what's taking place here. So especially if that's the thrust of the offense of Miriam against Moshe, and that's called Lashon Hara, and this is the major example of Lashon Hara in the Torah, so then there is quite a lot to learn from this story and quite a lot to focus on. So this detail of Lashon Hara b'fanav, which we may not necessarily have thought of as the most significant detail, but it may have outsized relevance to us if this lamdusha chiluk that the Sfarim are saying in defense of the Maral calls our attention to this distinction in the service of defending the Maral's point, so then this is a very valuable takeaway, and it may say much more than this one point. It may actually tell us about the whole gather of Lashon Hara, but also especially in this context, so that's also particularly relevant, because the fact of this particular distinction of when it's okay b'fanav and when it's not okay b'fanav. So when we're talking about something that's just factual, so then we can understand, okay, so then it makes a difference if the person's there, because he can defend himself, and he can say that, you say somebody robbed the bank, he can say, no, I didn't rob the bank, what are you talking about, you're lying. But if I say my opinion about why somebody does something, or I characterize his objective actions, so then it doesn't help that he's there. He could scream till he's blue in the face. He's not going to be able to prove that my characterization is wrong. So my ability to do harm is much more powerful, and it's much more insidious. I can do much more damage, and his presence is not going to be able to thwart that damage at all. So that itself is also a very significant point. So not only is this prat and Hilchos Lashon Hara very significant in terms of telling us something about the whole issur of Lashon Hara, but also this particular chiluk about b'fanav, when yes and when no, maybe also is very instructive about the nature of the issur of Lashon Hara. And this parsha and the story in this parsha has a lot to tell us even beyond its details. And I also want to add one other point that has particular relevance for us, especially Bizman Hazeh, and that is there is another day in Rishonim how to interpret this Gemara about Milsa, about Ape Mara and Lesbu Mishum Lish Nevisha. So that Gemara about Ape Mara and Ape Tlasa, both of them, so as we noted, they both sound surprising. The idea that you wouldn't have an Issur Lashon Hara if you're speaking in the presence of someone or if you're speaking in the presence of a crowd of more than three people. So the notion that either one should be permissible or shouldn't be Lashon Hara, in both cases we said is surprising, and in both cases the Chafetz Chaim said it's not true, it's actually worse. So what does the Gemara mean? So one interpretation can be found in Tosfos. Tosfos in Erechin and above Basra has a different interpretation. And they suggest that we're actually talking about a very specific, very narrow kind of situation. That we're not talking about normal Lashon Hara where you're being nasty and where you're disparaging somebody openly. We're talking about actually a very specific kind of situation where you're actually maybe praising somebody, but you're saying something which is a little bit ambiguous, and it could be taken either positively or negatively by the audience. So let's say, for example, you want to say, oh, that guy, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him. So you might mean he's reliable, Or you might mean that you can always count on him to mess up. So that's a problem because you don't know how the listener is going to take it. So presumably you shouldn't talk like that because it's risky. There's a 50-50 chance that your listener is not going to know what you mean and is going to come away with a negative impression of the person you're speaking about. So Tosus suggests that that's what we're addressing here. We are addressing a comment like that, and indeed it's problematic to talk like that when your audience may not know whether you mean it positively or negatively. However, if the person you're talking about is there, your Ape Mara, or there's a crowd there, there's more than three people, so it's going to spread, so then we can assume that you only mean it in a positive way. Because, yes, it's possible you would be nasty, because all of us are sometimes nasty, the Gemara says in Bava Basra, V'kulan bavak lashon hara. So it's possible to imagine that that's going on. But even if we are sometimes susceptible to that, but you wouldn't do that if the person could hear you, if the person is present, or if it's going to get back to him because you're in front of a large crowd. So if I take you aside and I say, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him, you don't know if I mean you can always rely on him to help or you can always count on him to mess up. But if I would get up in front of the shul dinner with hundreds of people there and Yehoshaphat is sitting right in front and I say, you can always count on him, so then it's safe to assume that everyone's going to understand I mean it in a positive way and then it's mutter to say. So that's another interpretation of what this Gemara means. And I think that has great significance for us in a different way. Because when we consider the question of Lashon Hara, or speech overall, in the internet age, it's quite humbling to think about the fact that the Rishonim were assuming that Tosus, however many hundreds of years ago this Tosus was written, Tosus was assuming, okay, so sometimes we might be nasty, but we wouldn't speak in a nasty way if the person could hear us or if it was in front of more than three people. So nowadays, here, we speak in the World Wide Web, which is not Ape Tlasa, it's Ape 7 billion. And that includes the person who you're talking about. So is it still true that you can assume no one would be nasty under those circumstances? So probably not. Probably we don't have that same type of sensitivity that we once had. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that we can't communicate in these venues anymore. But it probably means that we have to be a lot more careful, that our sensitivities have changed dramatically since the time of the Bali HaTosfos when they interpreted the Gemara in such a way. So I thought that was also a very important takeaway from this din. So just to quickly chazer some of the takeaways from what may otherwise have seemed like a very narrow, very specific din, but has, I think, a much broader application. So we considered the question of the statement in the Gemara, Kol Milsa des Amris Ape Mara, Lespuhu Mishum Lishnabisha, which seems surprising, and indeed the Chafetz Chaim says the opposite, and the Rambam says the opposite, leading us to maybe think that this opinion is not accepted lahalacha, it's just Das Yachid in the Gemara. But there were those who did accept it. One possibility is that it's usher for other reasons, but it's not Lashon Hara, like the Sefer Yireim, who said that Lashon Hara is about duplicity and being two-faced, and so if you're overt, then it's maybe something else, but it's not Lashon Hara. And Maharal, who along similar lines understood that maybe it's something else, but it's not the specific nature of Lashon Hara for whatever reason. And the Chafetz Chaim, who argued on the Maharal because of this week's Parsha and Miriam's Aveira, which was definitely Lashon Hara, and according to an opinion, the Medrash was in the presence of Moshe. So we saw that there were some number of Achronim who were all in the tradition of the Maharal, who had similar types of approaches to defend the Maharal, that there are two dinim in Lashon Hara, and he's talking about when you're relating something simply factually, so then indeed that does not apply if the person is there, because the person can defend himself. But when it's the more subjective failure to be dam l'chav schus, so then that is lashon hara, even if the person is present, and that's what's going on in this week's parsha. And we noted that that is highly significant, because that shows us that there is a concept of lashon hara, maybe the ikar lashon hara, especially if that is what was going on in this week's parsha, and that is what is held up as the main lesson to remember. The Ramban telling us it's a mitzvah specifically, one of the 613 mitzvahs, to remember this story to keep us away from Lashon Hara, and that's what we tend to undervalue as the Isser of Lashon Hara, the subjective assessments of agreed upon facts, and that also particularly is relevant to this Chiluk, because straight out facts, it helps if the person is there to be able to defend himself, but when it's a subjective assessment, even if the person is there screaming his defense, it's not going to matter, because there's no way he can refute your subjective characterization. And that has a lot to say about the gather of what the damage of Lashon Hara is, and perhaps why we have this prohibition even when involving true facts. And then we added also the explanation of Tosus, that we're talking here about statements that actually maybe are positive but could be interpreted negatively by the audience. But it's okay if the person is there or there's a crowd there, because that will show that your intent is positive. And we noted that's also highly instructive, because if the assumption was once upon a time that we wouldn't say something nasty when the person could hear or a large crowd could hear, and nowadays in social media and the internet, clearly that is no longer the default assumption, and that itself a very sobering thought, which can have a big impact on how we conduct ourselves if we take that to heart. Okay, so hopefully some powerful takeaways, and if we focus on the directive that the Ramban feels is the mitzvah, that this week's parsha gives us a special obligation of attention and internalization, and that we are obligated min ha-Torah to remember this week's parsha, so hopefully the themes that we have focused on tonight are a particular kiyum in that, and we should be zocha through that to be saved from this michshol. And you know, it seems like, ironically, as some of the Sfarim point out, that the Torah is speaking Lashon Hara about the great Tzadekes Miriam, and as others point out, Ron Cutler and others discuss, that it's a great tzchus to Miriam, that we should be saved from this pitfall by understanding that she can point the way. And the fact is that it is a tremendous danger that even the greatest, literally the greatest in our history, are susceptible to. And the only advantage that we have is that we are able to look to her story and to recognize just how easy it is to stumble. And that, as the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Tzaras, that here Miriam was a tzaddikas of huge proportions and meant only well and dearly loved the person she was speaking about and helped to raise that person. And yet, even she had this issue in how she spoke about him. So the rest of us, the only advantage that we have over her is that we have her lesson, that we are able to think about that and to take advantage and to think about it in advance and to internalize that message. So that is the mission that we have regarding this week's parsha. And hopefully, with this advance warning, we should be successful. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. It should be only good things. And God willing, next week we'll talk about something else.